Good morning, this will be Dee Feikert reading the Decatur Herald Review for September 14th, 2015. Our first article is entitled, Special Olympians Score Win Every Time. This is out of Decatur. It was a great day to play softball in Rotary Park, where the only thing coming down the baselines of Field 2 Saturday morning were cats and dogs. The Clinton County Cats of Nashville, Illinois, and Dreamcatcher's Devil Dogs of Decatur, to be more precise. Today, the Decatur team is one of two going for the bronze in its division of the 2015 Special Olympics Illinois Outdoor Festival, after the dogs fell to the cats in their opener Saturday. The score was 19 runs to 2 in the fifth and final inning of play, but took nothing away from the grin of Andy Langford, 22, who pitched the first two innings. We could do a little better, but I think we're doing pretty well, Langford said. We've done great to get this far. Carolyn Klokic, Central Regional Manager of Sports Training for Special Olympics Illinois, said more than 650 Special Olympians are competing at the state level this weekend, some in softball at Rotary Park and others in golf at Hickory Point Golf Course. Paula Boys of Decatur, Special Olympics Athletic Director with husband Bill, said the high-five first baseman Allie Jones gave an opposing coach after making an out is typical behavior. It doesn't matter whether we win or lose, and I'm a Chicago Cubs fan, so I mean that, she said. They're having fun, and that's the main thing. Individual skills contests wrapped up Saturday, while team competition continues through this afternoon. Among the individual skills contestants in softball was Austin Duval, 10, of Fisher. He and his maternal grandmother, Kim McQueen of Champaign, practiced his throwing and fielding during a spirited game of catch before he competed Saturday. Good throw, McQueen encouraged. Austin's mom, Heidi Duval, said being a Special Olympian gives him the same kinds of experiences that his two big brothers and his big sister have had growing up. When I had Austin, I was determined not to treat him differently, Duval said. He learns like the others, it just takes him longer. The next article is entitled, Assessment Notices Bring Many Questions, out of Decatur. Curiosity has arisen among some residents as property assessment notices were sent out across Decatur earlier this month. The notices update residents on their assessed property value and list potential changes that have been made to them in recent years. The new assessed property value will affect how much property tax residents will have to pay. Notices are part of the quadrennial assessments done by the Decatur Township Assessor's Office, which is obligated by state law to update the information on the more than 27,000 parcels of property in the township every 4 years and notify property owners. Those assessments are then taken to the Macon County Supervisor Assessments Office, where any further changes must be approved by the county's Board of Review. It's a confusing process, Decatur Township Assessor Vicki Sheet said. We understand that this is their money, and they want to understand what's going on with these assessments. Sheet said her office has received more than 100 calls, emails, or walk-ins from people trying to learn more about the notices. Sheets encourages those with questions to contact her office or go to the website www.decaturtownshippossessor.com. I think that's an error. I think that should say possessor, where people can learn more about the process and search information on township properties. Once we walk them through, we can invite them to come in and go over the assessments and show them where we're coming from, Sheets said. Again, I believe that website should be www.decaturtownshippossessor.com. One thing the assessor's office cannot do is make direct changes to assessments, as all have already been turned into the county's offices. Those who wish to make changes would need to file an appeal before September 30th with the county's chief county assessment officer on the third floor of the Macon County office building. While her office cannot make changes, Sheets still encourages those who wish to make an appeal to contact her office first. Along with making a note to make further future changes to the assessment, she said her office can clarify why the changes were made and provide useful information for an appeal. Our next article is entitled Low Income Offered Retail Training, again out of Decatur. One of Decatur's oldest homeless shelters is the latest social service agency to launch a job training program. The Reverend Ed Bacon, director of God's Shelter of Love for the past year, unveiled a retail training institute that will operate out of the ministry's Blessingsdale's thrift shop starting next month. "We're moving to a benevolence model, to a development model," Bacon said. "It's the old axiom that if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, but if you teach a man to fish, you feed him for a lifetime." Bacon was speaking Saturday evening at the ministry's fall banquet at the Grand Palace of Heartland Community Church. Patterned after job training offered by Mission St. Louis out of its Revive thrift shop, the new Retail Training Institute will cost $15 for about 300 hours of training over 8 weeks. Each week, the training will involve a pair of two-hour classes, each on general job skills, taught by Bacon at First United Methodist Church, and 35 hours of on-the-job training at Blessingsdale's, under the supervision of Bacon's wife, Susan, the shop's manager. Nancy Beaker, former manager of Von Maur in Hickory Point Mall and a regular volunteer at Blessingsdale's, will serve as program consultant. "We are cultivating relationships with retail managers and store owners in Decatur," Bacon said. "In time, our goal is to provide not only job skills training, but job placement for people who come through this program." He also hopes to enroll 12 to 15 students each session, including residents of the shelter, diners at the Good Samaritan Inn, and members of local churches and the community, and offer 3 sessions a year. The soup kitchen already offers Mercy Kitchens, culinary arts training, and Mercy Gardens, DIGG, DIG, horticulture training. DIG stands for Decatur is Growing Gardeners, an organization which is merging with the Good Samaritan. Elsewhere in Decatur, New Life Pregnancy Center hires clients to work at the New Life Thrift Shops, the center. The center opened in 2011. Next article is entitled Model A, Historical Throwback. This article is out of Nokomis. Henry Ford had little time for the lessons of the past. "History is more or less bunk," he said. Ford, who still managed to believe in reincarnation, always said he lived for the moment. It's also clear he didn't have much respect for the continuity of the alphabet either, following his phenomenally successful Model T car with the phenomenally successful Model A. In an A, production run stretching from 1928 to 1931. So it's kind of ironic that one of the 4,858,644 Model A's that rolled off the production line, a 1929 Model A pickup truck, has become the time machine of choice to ferry proud owner Nathan Rupert into the past. Rupert, who lives in Nokomis, says he time slips every time he climbs inside his gleaming jet-black beast, standing remarkably tall on 21-inch wire wheels, and clatters off for a ride. "Well, anybody can have the comforts of home," he says dismissively of modern automobiles with their air conditioning, computers, Bluetooth phone hookups, and clone styling. "But you can throw yourself back in history in here," he adds, gesturing around the Model A cab, cozy with just 68-year-old Rupert and a guest. "You get to relive what other people have gone through, what it must have been like out on the road when these cars were popular and very useful tools. What's better than time traveling with one Model A? How about dozens of them?" Rupert is the organizer of what will be the 7th annual Model A Day in Nokomis on Saturday. It's a day-long celebration of all things Model A that features a car display in the town park and a period clothing fashion show to add another heavy dose of verisimilitude to the idea of reversing time. Rupert says the vehicles are pristine but driven examples of nostalgia, and onlookers who come to chat to their owners while gazing into the gleaming paintwork of Model A pickups, sedans, roadsters, town cars, and on will have a grand old time. Model A Day is celebrated worldwide, explains Rupert, who belongs to the Model A Ford Club of America and the Sullivan Land of Lincoln A's. We celebrate the car's contribution to industry, culture, history, the whole works. Henry Ford, who was branded a traitor to capitalism by the Wall Street Journal for introducing the $5 a day pay scale in 1914, got the last laugh as he grew fabulously rich, throwing open the doors of auto affordability to everyone. Rupert had first encountered one of his creations while growing up on a Nokomis farm where a friend who helped bale hay owned a Model T. Rupert fell in love with its bolt upright, no-nonsense styling. "I decided I was going to get me something like that one day," he recalls. But he had to wait until the end of a 20-year career in the Navy as an aircraft piston engine mechanic and another 20-year career running a lawnmower repair business. Just as he was getting ready to retire in 2007, his understanding wife, Dorothy, reminded him it was time to make good on his youthful car pledge, and Rupert went shopping. He looked at many makes and models, but fell in love with the Model A pickup and traveled more than 300 miles to buy it in Des Moines, Iowa. He's lavished money and time restoring it to pristine originality and made a few period improvements, such as adding a vacuum-operated windshield wiper instead of the original hand-cranked one. Rupert stands for a moment, watching the tiny six-engine single wiper whip to and fro after the engine caught and fired up at the first attempt. Then he's ready to hit the road for another 45-mile-an-hour run down memory lane, waving at smiling passers-by who seem to feel an instant connection to the car and always wave at him. His 40-year-old son, Richard, has been for many a spin with Dad and has watched that connection snap on in the public eye like a set of headlights. "People just have a kind of yearning for the old days," he says. "My dad's car is a throwback to what people think was a simpler time." His father is also a constant evangelist for the joys of the Model A hobby and is keen to recruit fellow travelers on the road home to the way we were. But if you hop on board, don't expect your garage floor to be pristine when you get back to the 21st century. "The Model A will always leak," says Rupert. "They say if there's no oil dripping on the floor, your car is out of oil." The next article is entitled "Event Aimed at Halting Monarch's Decline." The lead picture for this article shows Audrey Curtin, 9, of Blue Mound, watches her grandmother, Gay Donahue of Decatur, release a newly tagged monarch butterfly during an educational event Sunday afternoon at Rock Springs Conservation Area. Okay, this is our article is out of Decatur by Teresa Churchill, H&R Senior Writer. When the image on the screen shifted from tall grasses and colorful wildflowers to a field covered with the rubble left by a combine, 8-year-old Elena Offrecht couldn't help but suck in her breath. "Why did they have to do that to the prairie?" she wanted to know. The Dennis School third grader and more than 60 other people learned Sunday afternoon that dwindling habitats have caused the population of monarch butterflies east of the Rocky Mountains to decline from an estimated 1 billion less than 20 years ago to a low of 33 million over the winter of 2013-2014. "It's a cornerstone species, so if we lose them, what else are we going to lose?" Kirby Pringle asked. "We have to have pollinators because 30% of our food supply is insect-pollinated." A plea to help the monarchs by Pringle and his wife Cindy was part of a Monarch Madness event hosted Sunday afternoon at Rock Springs Conservation Area by Macon County Master Gardeners. Beth Allhands, Master Gardener Program Coordinator for the University of Illinois Extension in Macon County, said the Extension Office in Decatur has been giving away milkweed seed that gardeners have collected because they've gotten so passionate about helping the monarchs. The butterflies must lay their eggs on milkweed because the caterpillars that emerge are built to eat those leaves. Wildflowers such as goldenrod that bloom in late summer also support monarchs as they head toward central Mexico for the winter. Jan Sickbert of Argenta and other master gardeners organized Sunday's event, where Pringles debuted their newest film, Grace of the Monarch. Sickbert's daughter, naturalist Cindy Blobaum of Des Moines, Iowa, showed people how to catch, tag, and release monarchs so scientists can learn more about them. Bill Cook of Pena asked if caterpillars hatching out this late in the year have any chance of surviving a migration that peaks in Illinois in mid-September. That led Cindy Pringle to tell about the time she found some caterpillars not expected to emerge from their chrysalises until late October, so she sent them with the grandson of a resident at Jarman Center Senior Living Apartments in Tuscola, where she and her husband maintain a butterfly nursery. He was moving to Texas, so they got a nice little ride to Austin, she said. We give monarchs a head start whenever we can. Our next article is entitled Dogs, a Study in Fashion for Fido Scurry Fundraiser. Again, this article is out of Decatur by Ryan Voiles, H&R staff writer. With her backpack, skirt, and big glasses, Chloe was in the perfect position to be teacher's pet. And after a stiff competition at Fairview Park, the 10-year-old Schnoodle walked away as one of Saturday's winners. The small dog was among those awarded Saturday morning at the 15th annual Fido Scurry for their costume, and her owner, Decatur's Louisa Hunter, could not have been more proud. We always come to this and want to put on a good showing, she said. We want to do what little we can do to help. The Fido Scurry, which includes the costume contest and an annual run walk, is one of the biggest fundraisers for the Decatur and Macon County Animal Shelter Foundation, and Shirley Stanley said the amount of community support never ceases to amaze her. It's been great to see people out here running with their dogs, said Stanley, president of the foundation. We've had people come from across the state come here to run with their little companions. About 125 people came to the park Saturday morning to participate in the event, accompanied by dogs of all varieties. With the back-to-school theme of the event, several dogs were dressed in their best skirts and dress shirts, complete with full backpacks and an apple to impress their teacher. One of those dogs, dressed for the occasion, was Weston, a 9-year-old West Highland White Terrier. Looking as though he was about to be late for chemistry class, the terrier won Best Overall Costume to the delight of owner Sharon Shively. It's great being able to see all the different dogs at the event, said Shively, who has brought Weston to the event several times in the past. I'm glad to see Weston named as teacher's pet. Fido Scurry also featured an ecumenical blessing of all two-legged and four-legged participants by the Reverend Joe Molly of Holy Family Catholic Church, free massages by Chris Henneberry, K-9 demonstrations by the Macon County Sheriff's Office and Decatur Police Department, and more. While the weather in years past has driven away some participants, Stanley had a good number of people found Saturday's temperatures in the mid-50s as especially suitable to walk or run alongside their pets. This really is the best running temperature, Stanley said. It's far better than sweating constantly in the heat. Next article is Illinois Wesleyan expected to name president Monday. This is out of Bloomington by Lenore Sobata, Lee News Service writer. Illinois Wesleyan University will announce the successor to President Dick Wilson on Monday morning. The new president will be introduced at 11:30 a.m. at an all-campus forum at the Hanson Student Center. Wilson is retiring after leading Wesleyan for 11 years. He announced his plans in December, agreeing to continue serving until after the new president takes over. A nationwide search was conducted to select the new leader, the 19th in the history of Wesleyan, which was founded in 1850. Jean Baird, a senior executive with State Farm and 1980 graduate of Wesleyan, led the search committee. She will be present for the announcement along with George Vineyard, a chairman of Wesleyan's Board of Trustees. Wilson has been president since July of 2004, coming to Bloomington from the University of Illinois, where he was associate chancellor for development and had worked for 26 years. In an interview on the first day of classes last month, Wilson was asked what he thought his legacy would be. "I suppose it's natural to hope that people would view your presidency as successful. I hope people would think that I've been fair, open, and honest in the decisions I've made," Wilson said. "I hope at some level that we've moved the university forward." Wilson compared being a university president to pushing a boulder up a hill and expressed hope that he'd done his share to move the boulder along. "I do hope that there is a sense that we've done the best job we could do in addressing the financial challenges that we have faced, and for that matter, all of higher education faced," he said. In addition to navigating the financial challenges of the past decade, other accomplishments Wilson cited were the Transforming Lives campaign, which has raised $141 million, an increase in the percentage of Black, Hispanic, and other underrepresented groups from 10% to 20% of the student population, and capital projects such as State Farm Hall and renovations to the Shirk Center. He emphasized that these achievements were a group effort, saying you don't do any of these things alone. Our next article is Horror Film Scares Up Support. This is out of Mount Zion by Danette Beckett, H&R staff writer. Horror films have a special fan base. Whether the film is a psychological thriller or a gore fest, a scary movie can draw a crowd. Heroic Age Studios is inviting those believers into its new film project, Frightful 5000. The studio has begun a process of producing movies by incorporating those who know the genre. It takes fans of the films and involves them in the process of actually making that film, said Eric Hector, creative director for Heroic Age. "We are starting out with horror fans because horror fans are very intense, very into films that they like." The studio will accept 5,000 fans who are interested in making a horror film. For $60 each, fans will help pick the name of the film. They will also watch online screen tests of the actors and vote for the main actors. They will be allowed to see the making of the film and have their names listed in the credits. After the film is finished, the fans will be invited to a premiere convention to watch the film with celebrities and others who helped create the film. The event is similar to a red carpet premiere without the tuxedos and formal gowns. "Horror film fans don't necessarily want to dress up," said Tim Lynn, Heroic Age production manager. The story focuses on the nursery rhyme, "Peter, Peter, Pumpkin Eater." The screenplay has been seen by important names in the horror industry, including actor Tony Todd of Night of the Living Dead. The story was written by Hector and presented to Hollywood producers. Several agencies showed interest in the story, but after many negotiations, it was put on a shelf. Hector knew the potential of the story, so he brought it back to his studio. "This way we don't have to rely on anyone else," he said. "We know you are making a movie that your fans want to see." Hector and Lynn presented the film project to fans at horror festivals. They were able to register on average of one person every 2 minutes while at the events. "This showed that people are interested," Hector said. "Because production is in the hands of Heroic Age Studios, filming will not begin until the goal of 5,000 fans has been met. After a year of presenting at the festivals, the studio has 10% of the total needed. We can tweak it if we only make 5,000, Hector said. Participants can learn more about the project during the Art of Fear exhibit, starting at 10 a.m. October 10th at the studio. The exhibit will have Halloween-themed art along with food and entertainment. Participants are also able to sign up on the Heroic Age Studio website. For $60, you can get an awful lot," Lynn said, "and you get to be part of something from the ground up. Frightful 5000 is the first project allowing movie fans the opportunity to be part of the filmmaking process. The studio plans to continue producing international films called Fanatical 5000 with the help of the fans and community. This is a launching pad, Lynn said. Down the road, we'll do other films. The studio goal is to build on the Frightful 5000 movie and create other films such as action and family genres. During the Frightful 5000 process, fans will be able to contribute to future projects. Heroic Age is an up-to-date studio with a red Epic Dragon camera, an 18,000-square-foot production facility, full grip and lighting packages, editing suites, soundstage, and animation studio. Everything we need to make sure this is a high-end production, Hector said. Next article is entitled Sewer Cloggers Spark Warning. This is out of Decatur by Allison Petty, H&R staff writer. Ever see those flushable wet wipes? For the love of your sewer pipes, don't flush them. Officials from the City and Sanitary District of Decatur agree that the wipes, which are marketed as toilet safe but do not dissolve in water, are among a list of items and substances that create headaches when they enter the sewer system. Nothing good comes from the resulting clogged pipes, which can lead to sewer backups in residents' basements or bathrooms. Other no-nos include any type of cooking oils, fats, and grease, food wrappers, cup and plastic bottles, prescription drugs, and motor oil, gasoline, and other chemicals. Improper disposal of the latter could have led to a dangerous situation last month, said Kent Newton, interim executive director of the sanitary district. An employee inspecting the Lakeshore Drive pump station August 17th noticed the strong odor of gasoline. Because of the potential from explosion from those vapors, the Decatur Fire Department ventilated the pump station until they dissipated to safe levels. The district is conducting tests to try to find the source of contamination, Newton said, as well as its chemical makeup. Because this line does not include storm sewers, Newton said the chemicals were likely poured or spilled down a drain. Grease presents a much more common problem, Public Works Director Rick Marley said. He longs for the days when people would store their bacon grease in coffee cans until it cooled, then throw the cans away. Instead, he said, people now often wash oils and grease down the drain, sometimes thinking that running hot water at the same time will help the process along. There's no way that is ever a good idea, and there's really no way to make it not a problem, Marley said. The best thing is simply don't do it. Because the sewer lines are cold, like the soil around them, even small amounts of grease or oil invariably coagulate. Those unsightly chunks adhere to tree roots and sometimes invade the sewer pipes, seeking moisture, Marley said. Tree roots also ensnare the so-called flushable wipes, so as well as paper towels and similar items that do not disintegrate. Marley and Newton said people should only flush toilet paper, which dissolves in water. Flushable wipes don't break down like toilet paper does, and so they clog up motors and the propellers of the pumps, Newton said. These pumps are really expensive to repair or... In response, he said the sanitary district has purchased what are called chopper pumps, which can break up the solids better, but are more expensive to purchase and maintain. Decatur is not the only city to experience problems with the wipes. The city of Wyoming, Minnesota, filed a class action lawsuit against 6 makers of the wipes in April, alleging that they cause thousands, if not millions, of dollars in problems. While people should be careful about what they put down the drains in their homes, Marley said the only substance that should enter the stormwater system is water. If you care at all about the environment, put your trash in a proper trash container and don't put anything into the storm sewer that shouldn't go there, Marley said. Used motor oil should be returned to an auto parts store. Marley also encouraged people to be careful with their lawn chemicals and herbicides, which could run off into the stormwater system. Ultimately, stormwater runoff winds up in Spring Creek. This is the end of reading of part 1 of the Herald Review. Stay tuned for part 2. This is Dee. Thank you.